The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It is Thursday, August 26th, and we've got a lot to talk about today, including the debut of the unnamed named book club. We're going to be talking about Hanif Abdurraqib's They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. We'll talk about the first half of that book. Really excited to have the book club back. But before we get into anything else, I have to introduce my two best internet buddies in the world. Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubbas?
And I'm Mike, a.k.a. Guardy B, and we have new microphones. So if it sounds better, congratulations to Jackson for it sounding better, the producer. And if it sounds worse,
you blame it all on him. It's all his fault.
We're not Adam, if that's the case.
Hey, I think the book club was called Fuck Football We Reading. Now somebody hit me up like, Fuck Football We Reading, bitch. So I think that was the name of the book club originally. So, I mean, hey, I'm down for that because, you know,
still because it's fuck football. For the most
part. Right. You know what I mean?
Okay, gentlemen, could you click on the Twitter link that I sent
what
you?
What the fuck is this? You sound like a professor, my nigga. Gentlemen, can you please turn to page 87?
Jackson told us this is professional podcasting today.
You really taking this professional mic seriously, dog?
I sent a prompt, but listen, weirdly enough, the big basketball story of the week, which is why we have a book club that we're getting going, is that Steph Curry's parents are getting divorced. And I don't really want to talk about anyone's parents getting divorced, but Solomon, Missouri had, I would say, one of the best things I've ever seen on Twitter.
Instant classic thread. You knew the first moment you read it. This is one of the all-timers in Twitter history.
So what I would like to do is a dramatic Jenkins and Jones reading of this Twitter thread.
Send me the thread.
I did. I texted it to the group chat. You should have it in there. You have it?
One second.
It was the second of the two that I sent.
Okay. Oh, wait. I don't see it. I don't get it. Okay. Yeah. I see. Jesus Christ.
I was like, you have an iPhone. You should still be receiving text messages.
I see it.
All right, so I'm going to go first, and then Tyler, and then John, and we'll just alternate, okay? Is everyone ready?
Yes!
Okay. Thank you again to Solomon, Missouri, for the best thing on Twitter this week.
Art.
Bud.
Fucking art.
Bud.
Let me tell y'all something.
You don't want to be out here.
You think you want to be out here, because you're not out here.
When you get out here, you ain't going to want to be out here no more.
Last time you was out here was different.
You think it's something better? I come to let you know the best you're going to get is what you already got.
I don't know why you don't want to do the work. You're going to come out here and ain't going to like it.
All they do is start podcasts and talk about plate fixing. As we read this on a podcast, nigga.
14 minutes being out here, you're gonna start saying these females.
If you can make it work, do so.
You don't want to be out here learning TikTok dances and falling off milk crates. Big facts.
Love the wife of your youth.
But they want rounds now. You better pray about coming out here.
Frightening. You think it's a game till you in the middle of 60K people in a panty and she point her finger at you a hard rapid flow Millie lyrics.
Do you like to drink charcoal ice cream?
You better learn to like it.
You don't know nothing about Sneaky Link. Now you knocking on the door of a 22-year-old with three other roommates because she got a side piece.
You're going to be wearing a hottie shirt by Thanksgiving. You better ask your wife to forgive you.
You better go listen to Lemonade and pray about it.
You don't have the cholesterol to be out here.
They're not eating butter pecan no more. Bluebell ain't out here.
You're going to be chasing Cialis with Red Bull.
Do you know what group chat is? You better learn, because you finna be the subject.
Do you know how to make a mimosa?
Tulum?
Tulum.
Tulum?
These people are 60% crab leg, 30% iced coffee, and 10% vaping.
Beloved, whatever went wrong, go back and make it right.
They pegging out here.
No! I'm not trying to scare you. I'm trying to prepare you. That's game right there. These people are children of Rihanna, born in the fires of chaos.
You're ready to leave your wife of 30 years till you wake up and your body is surrounded by rose quartz and moon water.
My message is simple. Del Curry, and it's the go home and be a family man Street Fighter meme. Oh,
art.
Boy.
Put it in a museum.
I've been single for probably like 6 weeks of my 30s, bro. And it was scary.
Bro, I remember the round shit. I'm like, nigga, I'm 34, bro. You know what I'm saying? I ain't got all that for you no more. We dead out here, nigga.
You think you want to be out here because you're not out here, but out here ain't like the last time you were out here, like he said.
And you ain't like you were last time you was out here either. You feel me? In the 20, all that shit is cool. When you grown, nigga, that shit tiring, nigga. Look, it's my bedtime, motherfucker. Shit. Fall asleep on the phone. It's 10 p.m. and I'm fighting sleep. And she talking about rounds, nigga. I hated being out there, nigga. Motherfucker. I just gave you 30 minutes and I pushed that, nigga. I usually apologize after 30. Like, I apologize for lying to you, nigga. And you want another one of those, motherfucker? That was my cardio for the day, goddamn. Shit, fuck me out there.
I'm going to tell you the tweet that made me feel old as fuck in this. Is charcoal ice cream a big thing with the youth these days? Because I never even heard of that shit.
I think that's the motherfuckers that's out there and beat up Chucks. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if you go to a nerd concert these days, you probably would have. You know what I'm saying? The nerd people back in 10 years ago are the charcoal ice cream motherfuckers now, probably. You feel what I'm saying?
I think that the vibes crowd, the elevate your vibrational frequency to match mine crowd, believes that charcoal is like
they brushing their teeth with charcoal, nigga.
Yeah.
That's the same people you waking up and there's a whole bunch of rocks around your ass, nigga. It looked like science class in seventh grade in that motherfucker when you pull up. You know,
I did
what I'm
not
saying?
Know the youngins were on a charcoal kit. Like, I mean, charcoal is like a great fucking filter and shit. Is that what they're using it for? Like, are they filtering
it's
the
an
ice
activated
cream with this shit,
charcoal, or? Like alkaline pH thing, I believe is the.
Nigga, we don't know. We don't know.
Alkaline yeah. infused ice
we
cream.
Ain't out here.
Nigga. Yeah. We ain't out
we
here.
We don't know. None of us can answer this shit.
But I do feel like this podcast is an authority on the specific emotion of this thread. Because your guy's first episode was like, you had
I'm
a
never getting married.
It was like, I'm never getting married. You know, I belong to the streets. It's breaking my heart that people that I like being with want to get married because I don't want to get married. And now, you know, skip forward a couple times on the remote on the Netflix show. Married.
I'm goddamn out the streets, nigga. About this motherfucker, yeah.
You feel me?
Who'd have thunk it?
It took me a little while, but I learned my lesson. And I'm not
without
going back, Bubba.
Yeah.
You feel me? I remember, I think I tweeted, just love them until they hate you or some shit. You know what I mean? Like I you know, some shit, there's nobody's the one out here. You know what I'm saying? Just enjoy love until they hate you. I felt like that at the time. You know what I mean? I do not feel like that, nigga. Fuck everything that I said about relationships. pre 2017, nigga. That shit was bullshit, nigga. I was clowning marriage and shit, nigga. Like, I was talking dummy shit out here, nigga.
I was about to say, yeah, don't run the original podcast back. But you're so much more content as someone who like knew you, you know,
we talked about this shit like you know, last podcast, how like we ain't chasing happiness, we just really have, you know, we just want to be content. Like we were talking about KD, and I was chasing happiness back then, and I was never happy. I was depressed as a motherfucker chasing that shit. Now I'm just like, yo, let me just have a regular ass day forever. And I'm hella happy, bro. You know what I'm saying? Hella content, I'll say. You feel me?
Yeah.
Shar and I just celebrated our 19th anniversary. We're 37 years old.
And
so
congrats, nigga.
I'm on, so, man, so we're on the, we've been on that wavelength, and it's better. Have you seen the Onion headline about the guy who lives in his hometown? Is like,
no.
It's just like, it's basically a headline about how this dude's friends who all moved away, like chasing jobs, are like making fun of how like happy and content he is all the time. But that, like that, it's just like, it's like, he can afford his rent. Like he's not even, you know, like.
Right.
That's my aesthetic for this half of my life right now.
Love the woman. Of y'all
got some big shit planned for the 20th?
What's that? Yes.
I was saying, y'all got some big shit planned for the 20th anniversary?
I mean, we had some, yeah, depending on whether the world exists or not, you know, like, I mean, I would love to, yes, absolutely, like, but this year we're like, we'll go eat, you know, fast food on an outdoor patio or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to really, like,
just
go anywhere.
Human again or shit. Yeah,
exactly. All right. The other basketball story this week, which I feel like is of note to some people we've discussed a lot recently, but Brian Windhorst had a story up on ESPN about Nerlens, the First Noel, suing Rich Paul for $58 million, Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, basically for Rich Paul telling him to bet on himself. Like, you know, according to the lawsuit, and obviously, you know, we'll see how everything plays out in court or what the settlement is or whatever. But Nerlens says that Rich Paul told him, don't take this $70 million offer that's on the table, bet on yourself, and, you know, get the hundred, you know, hold out for the $120 million, whatever. He ended up breaking his thumb, not getting that. He signed a qualifying 1-year offer of $4 million the next deal after having passed on $70 million. And then he's been basically making the league minimum. I think he made $5 million last year for the Knicks. So he's suing for the difference. And, I don't think this is going to go, like, you can't sue an agent for them convincing you to turn money down. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really see where this is going to go for him, but it is basically the Dennis Schroeder situation 4 years later in lawsuit form.
Yeah. I just don't get how, for one, you let Rich Paul snipe you away from your agent. You know what I'm saying? You were down to make business moves, you know, do your shit, you know, then, you know, that man misled you, made you fuck your money up. So like, bro, like, if you'd have stayed with your agent, he probably would have told you to take the 70 mil. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you hopped out there and you gambled on yourself and you fucking, you know, you rolled snake eyes. That's on you, dog. You can't put that shit on Rich Paul.
You should have loved the agent of your youth, Nerlens. Yeah, right?
He wanted to be out here. But
you didn't want to be out here, though. They want rounds out here, dog.
Bro, right?
Bro,
they
man.
Want rounds of playoff wins out here, dog. You know what I'm saying? Right.
You
want 100 mil.
You can't be mad at your agent because you are cap as fuck, nigga. You ain't, you know what I'm saying? Like, you haven't been good enough to make that type of money, motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And I'm going to keep it a stack with you. God can come down and tell me I'm going to get 120 if they put 70 million. I'll look God in his face and say, you's a fucking lie. You feel me? I'm signing right. This. I don't even need 120. Gotcha. Give me this one. Give me this 70. Fuck you talking about, nigga. You crazy, bro. Like, that's on you, bro. You a grown ass man. You made a decision at the end of the day, and you mad because you got some advice that didn't turn out well. He thought you was better than you were. He believed in you too. And you fucked him off too. He missed out on money fucking with your ass too, nigga. What about the money he missed out because you trash, nigga? You are regular as fuck. He gonna sue you for that, nigga. You were supposed to be a $120 million nigga, and you a $4 million nigga. You know what I'm saying? I wasted my time, motherfucker. I'm Rich Paul, bitch. Fuck you talking about. And fuck your little ass suing, nigga. Bitch ass nigga.
Rich Paul need to counter sue for his agent's fee that he would have got if that motherfucker actually got that check. You know what I'm saying?
You weren't worth this time, nigga. Fuck you talking about.
That would be quite a fucking twist. Like, Paul George's agent sues him for a little bit of money every time he misses a game winner. You know what I mean? It's just like, you're fucking up my money.
Paul George is just good enough to get all the money, right? He's good enough to get all the money, but he fucks up, you know what I'm saying? But he'll fuck up, you know what I'm saying? But Nerlens, that nigga wasted Rich Paul's time. And he wasted more time by suing him. Or at least his lawyer's time, because Rich Paul like, whatever, nigga. Nice for another second on this motherfucker, you feel me?
All right, that was Hoops Talk. Hoops Talk with Jenkins and Jones.
On our basketball podcast during the offseason. Nerlens Noel. That's how far we going down for fucking Hoops Talk. Nerlens fucking Noel, nigga. And divorcees. You know what I'm saying? That's what we on, nigga. Let's get to the book, bitch.
Well, hold up. Before we get to the book, we have a couple other things. I literally, like, six people texted, like, tagged us in the replies to this tweet about these giant tortoises. And I really love that we've successfully created a brand for the show that people are like, oh, interesting animal news. I better make sure Jenkins and Jones knows about it. Like, that's great.
Fuck yeah.
That's genuinely, like, very gratifying to me. So this is a tweet from Strictly Christo. I'll put it below the show when we link it out. It's a tweet about the giant tortoises native to these islands off the northern coast of Madagascar. One of the tortoises in this video weighs 550 pounds. Another one of the tortoises is 114 years old. And when you look at the video of them, they look huge. But when they pan over and you can see them standing next to a person, they look like dinosaurs. Like, it doesn't even make sense how big these fucking tortoises are.
Like a Land Before Time shit. They look like baby brontosauruses. You know what I'm saying?
Big as fuck.
Dog, like, what's really funny about this is I was on the golf course, like, probably last week, looking up giant tortoises.
what the fuck for?
I don't know how I got there, but I was like, I remember sitting beside my nigga, quiet as fuck, scrolling through giant tortoise information on my phone, nigga, like last week. So, we all tapped in. You know what I'm saying? I love that shit. You feel me? But yeah, it's crazy. That shit's fire as fuck. But I love that, like, things like that still exist. We still get glimpses into the world that existed before humanity. You know what
I'm
saying?
We are the least interesting thing on planet Earth.
By far.
Easily.
By far. Easily. Not even close. Not even close, nigga. Not even close. Like, we're boring as shit, nigga.
There was a video I saw today of a parrot stole a kid's phone while he was filming something and then flew the phone around, like, and it was still recording. And it was just seeing what a city looks like from the perspective of a bird flying at full speed is like, why is this here? Like, do you know what I mean? It was like, it's a bunch of trees and then there's these boring looking roofs. Like,
it didn't make sense. It was weird
because, you know, we don't see the world that we built. We see it from our lame ass perspective down here. And it's like, oh, a building makes sense. But from above, it's like, oh, these people put another fucking square out here. Like,
something I can shit on or rest on when I'm flying, you know what I'm saying, across the nation or whatever.
These idiots are obsessed with squares and rectangles.
What's funny about that is my lame ass human self. Like, when I'm in airplanes, the only time I'm truly impressed with humanity is looking down on what we created. You know what I mean? And from their perspective, they're probably like, that's the weakest shit on the fucking on Earth is what we created. And for me, it's our best shit is me looking down and seeing cities from up above. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. They're watching us pave a highway like, oh, they're drawing another stinky line across the.
Like, I'm extremely unimpressed, like, existing within being consumed by cities. Right. But, like, I think I actually tweeted that God probably looks down on us and be like, oh, like, you know, this is impressive because he sees that view.
I have the same feeling. Okay. I have the same feeling in airplanes, okay. especially at night when everything's lit up and you're like, we did do something here.
Right.
Like
right,
it might
right.
not end up being good, but like, right, you know. Right. Former MMA champion Tyron Woodley enters the boxing ring this Sunday to take on YouTuber turned boxer Jake Paul. And FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new customers exclusive 30-1 odds on either fighter to win. That's right. Now is the perfect time to give FanDuel a shot, because you can win $150 on a $5 bet. FanDuel is always hooking you up with exclusive odds boosts, great promotions, and so much more. That's why they're America's number one sportsbook. So don't miss out on your chance to win $150 on a $5 bet on either fighter to win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code J&J to get in on the action. That's promo code J&J. Put in J&J. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Colorado, New Jersey, or West Virginia. First online real money wager only. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, it is our Thursday episode, which means we're going to do tenable and untenable very quickly. We didn't really have a particular topic, so each one of us just say something that was either very tenable or very untenable in your life right now. I will go first, which is that Disneyland is opening back up for selling annual passes for the first time since the pandemic. And they chose to sell them at the exact moment that we are recording this podcast. So I am refreshing a Safari browser, trying to get Disneyland passes while we are talking about Nerlens Noel.
You thirsty as fuck, Nick.
Very thirsty.
But understandably so. Understandably so.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
my untenable thing for the week.
Go ahead, Tyler.
So what? We're doing tenable and untenable.
You have just like one thing that's either tenable or one thing that's untenable that's going on right now.
Tenable. I want to say, you know, kicking it with the homies last weekend, man. We had fun like a motherfucker, bro. You know, I'm grateful for that. Grateful for y'all, man.
It was very tenable
weekend we had together.
Yeah.
It was the most tenable weekend I've had this summer, to be honest with you. It was great. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for tenabling it up.
I would say what's very untenable, and this is not funny at all, but like we talked about this a little earlier, man. I feel like as I get older, I feel it feels dumber and dumber not to be closer to my family and friends. And I think this weekend kind of made me kind of feel like, as we were all chilling and shit, families were together and shit like that, it kind of made me think about, damn, I'm really, a lot of the people that I love, like, you know, it's my most important people in my life, are so far away. And it seems like the dumbest way to exist, especially while reading this book too. But that's untenable, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, niggas need to be with their niggas. Family need to be with their family. That's how I feel right now.
You and I are both FaceTiming our moms when we're done.
Oh, bro. Like I told you, I'm finna be crying on the phone with my mama like 2 seconds after we get off this motherfucker. I'll miss you, my nigga, damn. I texted her. I was like, I miss y'all so much. I'm like, it feels really stupid to be this far away. I was texting her during the podcast. Like, it does. But anyway.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why I'm not really in a rush to move, you know, all my family friends here, you know, it's kind of different knowing, you know, your mom's 20 minutes away, you know, you can be out riding and just, you know, text home, you at the crib, I'm about to fall through, and, you know, y'all just kick it for a few, you know, little shit like that, man, you know?
Right. Like we said with this book that we're reading, I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, one day we're not going to be here, and it's very, very fucking real. You know what I mean? Like, you can't ignore that in the book. And like, for me to look back and see that I spent so much time away from the people that are most important to me, just seems like a bad decision. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Okay, we're going to open up our conversation of Hanif Abdurraqib's They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. This was Tyler's pick to kick off version 2 of the book club. And as a reminder, we read Roman numerals 1-3. Next week, we will read the rest of the book, which is the second half of the book. And then hopefully we'll be able to get Hanif on for an interview soon. But Tyler, why don't you kind of, you know, kick it off? You brought this book to us. I know John and I are both loving it, but what are your sort of takeaways from the first half of it?
Okay, so Roman numeral number 1, Chance the Rapper's Golden Year. This uh, this was published like after 2016 or so, back when we actually liked Chance. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
When Coloring Book was, you know, a big fucking deal. You know, that's an interesting passage where he kind of, you know, juxtapositions the optimism that Chance kind of brought in a very dark year. We all know 2016, like the first thing you think about that shit is Trump, of course. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to dig too much into that, but A Night in Bruce Springsteen's America, if y'all read that one. That's where, you know, he reveals where we got the title of They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. I'll go ahead and read a passage that takes us there. If you want to open your if you want to open your books.
Here, man, this is very teachery. She'd be very proud of this, dog.
Yeah. Okay, so
Char's
so
watching
background
TV
story,
in the other room right now, but for sure.
Yeah, so background story to A Night in Bruce Springsteen's America. Hanif mentions that he went to a Bruce Springsteen concert like a day after he left the Ferguson Mike Brown Memorial. And, you know, it's kind of some juxtaposition going on here that I'll explain after I read this passage here. All right. So in Bruce Springsteen's music, not just In the River, that was the album that he was going to the concert for, The River. I think about the romanticization of work and how that is reflected in America. Rather, for whom work is romantic and for whom work is a necessary and sometimes painful burden of survival. One that comes with the shame of time spent away from loved ones and a country that insists you aren't worked hard enough. In New Jersey, Springsteen's songs are the same anthemic, introspective paintings of a singular America. Men do labor that is often hard, loading crates or working on a dock, and there's often a promised reward at the end of it all. A loving woman always waiting to run with you, a dance with your name on it, a son who will grow up and take pride in the beautiful, sanctifying joy of work. I do not know what side of work the employees in the Prudential Center came down on that night. That's where he saw the concert, at the Prudential Center. I know that I understand being Black in America, and I have understood being poor in America. What I know comes with both of these things often together is work that is always present, the promise of more to come. Even in my decade plus of loving Bruce Springsteen's music, I have always known and accepted that the idea of hard, beautiful, romantic work is a dream sold a lot easier by someone who currently knows where their next meal will come from. I've been thinking a lot about the question of who gets to revel in their present with an eye still on their future and who gets discussed as though nothing about them could be promising. The River, stripped down to its base, is a romantic story about a guy who has nothing, trying to make his life and loves work in a world that doesn't always give him breaks he thinks he deserves. Hanging above Mike Brown's memorial was a paper sign. It read in all capital letters, "They can't kill us until they kill us." It seemed odd at first to see this statement over the memorial of a person who had been murdered and long buried. I think the consideration, though, was that when you come from a people born of a true oral tradition, you live lives even after you are no longer living a life. Mike Brown was flawed, but young enough to be romanticized in the way Springsteen's romantics bleed all throughout The River, where mistakes are large and beautiful and pointing to some much more spectacular end. What I understand about The River now that I didn't before I saw it in New Jersey is that this is an album coming to terms with the fact that you are going to eventually die, written by someone who seemed to have an understanding of the fact that he was going to live for a long time. It is an album of a specific type of optimism, one not afforded to everyone who listens to it. It is an album of men and women and families and the grand idea of surviving to enjoy it all. It is often fearless and forward-looking in its talk of both love and lust, a loss. There's a conflict between dreams and reality, of course, but the reality is still always one of survival. So basically, you know, in this essay, Hanif talks about how, you know, he went, you know, from a memorial of a life that was snuffed out, you know, and then he goes to Springsteen. And Springsteen's music is, it's dreary, but there's always like the light at the end of it. You know what I mean? Like he always has his music, like, I got to get out this dead end town before this depression kills him. But there's always that optimism of, you know, there's light at the end of that tunnel. If you get out of there, you know, you can make a better life for yourself and such. And, you know, Hanif is like, that's not a reality for everyone. You know, we, especially Black people, we don't necessarily have this optimism that there's some light at the end of the tunnel. We're persevering here. You know what I mean? And we're trying to just survive rather than kind of, you know, make it to the other side where there's light, because there's not an other side for a lot of us.
And that, we're talking about that, I don't think it was in that passage, but he talks about how being Black and just laughing and making love and having any joy because we have to fight at every step mm-hmm. of our lives, like, is rebellion. And that, yeah. The way he put it was beautiful, but like, yeah, it talks about that, like,
I thought that was crazy, like how he encapsulated the Black experience in like three sentences. You know, it's talking about how just showing happiness, doing things of joy is rebellion. But for me, what really like the we talked about this when he's talking about, I think, Fall Out Boy and Tyler. That passage, that essay was for like, I sound like a, I don't use phenomenal.
the longest essay in this half that we read is about he and his friend Tyler, who committed suicide, watching the band Fall Out Boy go like in person, like, you know, being at the show where they got the name of the band. There was just like a couple of dudes from different bands in the Chicago, you know, underground scene who formed this band. And then watching them blow up into this, you know, band that obviously reached, you know, kind of international success, and along the way his friend committed suicide, and it absolutely, like, one of the, it's not, it shouldn't even be called music writing, you know what I mean? I mean, no. Just obviously like above and beyond that, but that's what John's referring to. I know there are people listening who didn't read the whole thing, but that's the little synopsis of that essay.
But that's the best to me. I mean, that's the best writing to me, but the most amazing writing to me was the Prince one, because he wrote about Prince, and I think it's hard to write about something, like anything that's like that amazing, that special, and actually like do it justice, right? He wrote about Prince. It's 3.5 pages, and did Prince justice in 3.5 pages. You know what I mean? It starts off with him at the Super Bowl, and I think there's a part where it says he's talking about the broadcaster telling Prince, you know, hey, it's raining and stuff like that. And Prince is like, and he said, it's like, I'm sorry. And it's Prince, what do you want me to do? And Prince is like, can you make it rain harder? Which was like, oh shit. Okay, I'm dragged into this motherfucker. Shit
to say, right?
But what tripped me out is at the end when he says, dearly beloved, when the sky opens up anywhere, I'll think of how Prince made a storm bend to his will. How the rain never touches those who it knows were sent into it for a higher purpose. Dearly beloved, I will walk into the next storm and leave my umbrella hanging on the door. Whew, please join me. That shit was so beautiful to me that I put the book down and gave it to Rather. I was like, yo, you got to read this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I stopped reading because I wanted her to experience this because it was just too beautiful. And I had to sit down and kind of take that in. Like, the way this man writes, I think he feels different from most people. You know what I'm saying? I think he's he writes about a lot of different songs and like how it, like, we all listen to music and it's all the background to what we're doing. But I think to him, music and life are one. You know what I'm saying? Like the way he writes is all, you know, part of it's part of his life in a way that I don't, as somebody that loves music dearly, that can't imagine life without music, can't quite understand. And I think the way he writes and how he connects these things together is just, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. So he wrote about how, you know, Prince did the halftime show at the 2007 Super Bowl in the rain there. And basically, you know, in summation, he kind of said that if you are called for a purpose, as, you know, Prince was put on this earth to make music, that, you know, the trials and tribulations, such as, you know, the rain that rained on Prince's performance, they're not necessarily trials and tribulations. They're more of an ordaining, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a knighting of you, you know, during what you go through there. And I thought that was a brilliant fucking spin to put on.
I think how Prince, like, he didn't even get his hair wet. How he, like, whole time, you know what I'm saying? Like, he still moved through that night in that storm and it seemed like it didn't touch him. You know what I'm saying? And
I think Tyler, when you suggested this book, I was like, first of all, I get excited. I love reading books my friends recommended me. Like, I was excited that we were doing the book club again, but I don't really read a lot of music criticism. And so I was sort of like, okay, I'm curious to see how this goes. If Tyler liked it, I'm sure I'll like it, but it's not really the type of writing I spend a lot of time on. And part of that is because if a writer is, this makes sense. If a writer is smart enough to be interesting enough to read, there's usually kind of a sneering in their personality at, like, pop music, right? Yeah. Like, at Bruce Springsteen or Chance the Rapper, or you know, or there's a Carly Rae Jepsen essay in here that was
like, that wasn't super haughty,
you know, right? And I was so caught up in like, this dude is bringing that top level. I'm seeing like what John just described. I'm seeing things really clearly. I'm thinking about things really deeply. But I listened to, but he's writing about Fall Out Boy,
right?
You know what I mean? He's not like, well, you listen to the radio, you know. And I do, especially given that he writes about, you know, emo and punk and sort of scene music, especially there. I mean, like Green Day literally got kicked out of the underground club that they came up in because they signed with a major record label. They never set foot there again. You know what I mean? Like that's the ethos of that kind of music. And I do think there's that same kind of, that exists in rap and hip hop to an extent as well, though I think Chance the Rapper really the only rapper he wrote about in the first half of the book?
No, he wrote about Schoolboy Q too.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah.
Which was interesting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, and similarly, like he has a, I think he describes himself as a pessimist, but he also went to the Bruce Springsteen show. You know what I mean?
Like he's a cynic inside of a cynic inside of a cynic. You know what I mean?
He said that, like, but he's also writing about music so hopefully and beautifully. Like it's an interest. I'm really excited to, I hope we do get to talk. I'm really excited to talk to him because I think that perspective of someone who is a cynic, but still thinks it's worth it. He still thinks that music is worth it and life is worth it, and that it's worth loving people, even though they sometimes end up, you know, having these horrible, you know, tragic endings or whatever. I'm really fascinated in writers like that. And I don't feel like you usually get a lot of that, obviously, in people writing about Chance the Rapper. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think he's writing about music. I think he's writing about life. I think music is just such a big part of his life. It can't be ignored. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he's had a particular type of experience. Like he said, he'd be the only black person at these, like, you know, these heavy fucking metal, you know what I'm saying? Like concerts and shit. He's experienced life in a way that I didn't probably know. I don't know existed. I still am unfamiliar with that whole scene. You know, Tyler, I think you're the only person I really know that would listen. Only nigga I know, you know what I'm saying? That, you know what I'm saying? Like personally, that listen to that type of shit as a shorty. You know what I'm saying?
And even then, I don't go to like shows, you know what I'm saying?
Right, AMIC, right. For sure, really, you know? For sure. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, weren't you, as a kid, when there were snow days, you would like run and be like, we are the, you would sing that song, like, because you'd have to go to school?
Yeah, I was singing the schools out for summer shit in the hallways when we got out early for snow and shit, yeah.
Right, and dog, you like, I don't know niggas singing that shit in fucking elementary school, and, you know what I'm saying, middle school and shit. But yeah, so like, I love the fact that we are getting to experience the world from his eyes, being that I don't know anybody like him. You know, I don't know a lot of, I heard of Fall Out Boy, obviously they were enormous, but when he said Pete Wentz, like, who the fuck is this nigga? I had to look him up, you feel me?
Oh, you know Pete Wentz, y'all know how I feel.
I'm seeing him, I don't know his name, it didn't mean shit, but him talking about his homie, you know, Tyler and all the loss he's experienced, and then, you know, tying that in with Pete Wentz's struggle, you know what I'm saying, with fame and being popular, you know what I'm saying, in the space where that's not welcoming, you know. But like, yeah, like, I'm happy he wrote this book, but I'm just, it's what's wild to me is like getting to see things through his eyes, and he's so descriptive, you know.
Super descriptive, and you know, he's mentioned that, you know, death and loss is just something that's just so common to him,
right,
when it comes to his friends. You know what I mean? You know, he mentioned that he remembers dating a woman when he was 22, and she told him she'd never been to a funeral. And he was like, yo, is there something wrong with you, or is there something wrong with me? You know, because he said he'd been through to a ton by that time, you know, so.
Is that common in that space? Yeah, is that metal space?
A lot of overdose and a lot of, you know, depression and such. So unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, but whew. I mean, like, it was like it's very seldom do you read something that the backdrop is death, and you know what I'm saying, but it's still beautiful, you know. The and like you said, you talked about this, Mike, like all the hope he speaks of, You know what I mean? Like, as cynical as he is when he thinks about the reality of things, he is very hopeful for the future. You know what
I'm
saying?
He's still writing,
like,
about rain not touching Prince. You know what I mean?
You feel me?
Right.
You know what I mean? And he's talking about, like, his passing of friends and loved ones. You know what I'm saying? In a way that isn't, it's dark, but it's not sad, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's found ways to find things that are worth hoping for in very dark moments.
Well, we've talked about this before, but I mean, I'm not religious, like, in the slightest. I have literally, like, no personally held hope of an afterlife. Like, it's just not the way that I, like, live or see the world or whatever. And he talks about that quite a bit, you know, in the first half of this book, about thinking about the afterlife, about thinking about death and what comes after it. And I've always found, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I've always found a certain peace in that. Like, that for me has always been very useful in dealing with anxiety and everything, remembering, like, you're just a person with a job and a family, and you won't be here one day. And it's very unlikely that the thing you're worried about right now will be a factor in the way anyone thinks about you after you, you know. So, like, I'm very interested in that. I don't feel like I've seen a lot of people express that. Like, I don't feel like I see a lot of writing about death or the afterlife that I connect with in terms of the way that I see things. So I've been very interested in that because I've been at a lot of funerals, and funerals for kids that we've known and covered, you know, at my job and everything, where I've been going through some of the thoughts that he is describing in this book. I can't really, honestly, in, like, music or books or movies or any, I can't really think of any place I've seen that particular acceptance of mortality in a kind of a positive way expressed. So I was really interested in that, and definitely was not expecting it, you know, in essays about Fallout Boy and stuff like that.
I just can't
get over that. And John, you're right. He's not writing about the music, but it is such an interesting line to trace through, you know, the way that he's thought about things.
For sure, for sure.
Good pick, Tyler.
Oh, yeah, this shit fire. But y'all can't say, I mean, dog, I mean, I guess my choice is Beloved, and I know it's dark. But, you know what I mean? Like, he's finding beauty in darkness. And I think that's what she does as well in her writing. Like, with The Bluest Eye, as depressing as it was in moments, the writing itself was still beautiful. And I think that's what he does as well.
Pick that we're reading next by Clint Smith, How the Word Is Passed, is about the, like, the way that America thinks about slavery. So it's not a particularly upbeat book club, bro.
Okay. But I mean, like, regardless, I mean, we're talking about heavy shit, you know what I'm saying? But regardless, like, I mean, like, even though it's heavy, I think that we, like, it's like the writing itself is so beautiful that it makes it, like, I talked about how, this doesn't relate completely, but, you know, how watching BoJack Horseman, you know, if it was humans, it would be impossible to watch. But because it's cartoons and, like not even human cartoons, it makes it more digestible. Because the writing is so beautiful in these books, it makes the topics themselves more digestible. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, I don't leave this depressed. I don't feel that way.
I did just want to add that you, like, Clint Smith is writing about slavery, but is also a poet writing nonfiction. Like, it's an interesting aesthetic that we ended up kind of hovering around without particularly, like, intending to or discussing that.
Mm-hmm. But, like, this book itself, like, seeing him talk about his loved ones in the way he does, and, like the people he's lost, and you can see, he doesn't say their importance, but he talks about the moments he had with them, which makes you fully understand you understand their importance more than if he were to say they're important, right? And so that's what made me think about, damn, like, the most important people to me in my life are not close to me. You know what I'm saying? So for anything, it kind of makes me, it makes me realize, it's kind of like, I don't know, make me truly understand the like priorities and the my mortality and the importance of, you know, making the right decisions within the moment. You know what I'm saying? So
That's how I'm. That's so like that's how it's affecting me. It's like, wow, like, you know, I need to make decisions that will allow me to experience, you know, because I love my life experience, but allow me to experience things with more of my people. And maybe COVID's doing that too. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, like I don't have that heavy feeling after reading heavy topics, which is abnormal, and it's a superpower almost. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, you know, you mentioned he talked about Prince and his friend Tyler, who are both deceased, and it's like he did them both incredible justice in his works, right? Like, I came away from those works, of course, you know, missing that Prince. And I fell in love with his homie just off like two paragraphs. He said, like, the first time they met, they didn't know each other. He fell down in the mosh pit, and this dude who he didn't know came up and picked him up and then, you know, kept it moving, right? And he said another time he beat up a white dude for saying some racist shit to him at another one of these events. I like this Tyler motherfucker. You know, it's a stand-up dude, you know?
You know what I mean?
And you know, of course, Prince, you know, that goes without saying. So, yeah, he's really good at saying a lot without saying a lot, you know? Massive for that shit.
I would pay money. And I think Bomani Jones is the smartest person I know, right? I think if you know Bomani Jones, he's probably the smartest person you know. You know what I'm saying? And I would pay money to see them two talk about Prince. You know what I mean? Like, because this dude is just brilliant. You know what I mean? But I would pay money to see these dudes sit down and have a real, like, that's why I was thinking, like, damn, I would love to see him and Bo have a conversation in a way about Prince. You know, I might not even understand half of it, but I'd understand the beauty of that motherfucker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I can see that, you know what I mean? But I mean, it's fire. It's fire as fuck. Great pick, Tyler.
Great pick. Hey, you have any other stuff you wanted to bring up or anything you wanted to throw out there about it, Tyler?
I thought there was something interesting in the Schoolboy Q essay he wrote about how Schoolboy Q wants, I think the title Schoolboy Q wants people to say the word. And it's talking about how Schoolboy Q.
I don't think
Q
he wants them to. I think he was like, you know what I mean? Like in a particular setting, he's not tripping off of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Concerts.
Yeah. I mean, and Hanif spoke to that too, about how, you know, Schoolboy Q says, you know, he has told white people to, you know, you can say nigga at my concerts, just don't say it out of here. And Hanif feels like, man, I mean, I don't think you need to grant them permission for that. And you're very optimistic if you think that this is where they're going to cut it off at.
Right, right.
And that made me think about how, you know, Vince Staples, who's Schoolboy Q's homie, you know, from, you know, both LA area, LA Long Beach, you know, same area, same upbringing, met. But Vince had a line on his album where he was talking about how when he's doing shows and he asks where my niggas at and he sees white people yelling back, he thinks to himself, y'all would not come where I live. Y'all would not come kick it with me where I grew up, right? While where Schoolboy Q, he's kind of, you know, hey, I'm not here without y'all. Y'all got me out the hood. You know, y'all can say niggas. So it's kind of like, how is culture exchanged, right? Do you welcome people into your culture, or do you have to have a shared, as a Schoolboy is doing, or do you have to have shared experiences as Vince is, you know, as stance is? So that was something that I pondered, that I considered there.
I think you can welcome people into the culture without them saying nigga, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Too. Like, you know, I mean, the culture is much bigger than that word. You feel me? Like, Schoolboy, like, from it, on TDE, he's my favorite rapper. I've always said that. You know what I'm saying? He's not the best rapper, obviously, but he's my favorite rapper. But I vehemently disagree with that fucking shit. You feel what I'm saying? But, like, what's interesting, too, about Vince is talking about struggling, looking at the crowd and dealing with the fact that his crowd, the people
it's bothered him a lot. Yes.
Yeah, they look nothing like him or his homies. And these are the people that, you know what I'm saying, help him to, you know, ride around with the Tesla with no hands. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's a struggle he's had. So, yeah, that's interesting, though. It's a different approach. And, I mean, for Schoolboy, I understand his approach being that he came from really hard times. I remember him tweeting, like, yo, I'm trying to support my daughter. I'm struggling and shit. This was, like, before his first actual album dropped, we had a mixtape. And this is, like, after we saw him at South By when, they hadn't popped yet. We've seen him and Kendrick in dive bars, like, I think it was called Peckerheads or some shit off of 6th Street. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? It was like, That was only half the bar.
Peckerheads?
On the other side. Yeah, it was in Texas. Austin, Texas. On the other side, it was, what's the name before and after him? What's your boy name? Big Crit. So it's like, he was only like using half the bar. And you know what I'm saying? So this was before they really was getting money. And so I've seen him like struggling, you know what I'm saying? And talking about, you know, being on being on the fucking couch at the studio, sleeping there and shit, and saying he had to carry the blicky to fucking, you know, football practice and shit because there were ops on his same team at the community college he played football at. And at this point, so I'm not judging the nigga on some, but if that's my nigga, I'm telling him that's some fuck shit. And not in a way that I'm like, fuck you, but like that's some fuck shit for sure. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Because he came from a particular place that I just couldn't understand coming from. You know what I mean?
I think there's an interesting, you know, one thing that Hanif wrote about is the idea that, like, you certainly hear this plenty that Black people are like taking back the power or like weaponizing, you know, that word back by reclaiming it as our own or whatever. And I've always been like slightly skeptical of that idea. Just because I don't think individually that was true of many of my friends or the kids that I still cover. I mean, it's just like, that's just what they said. You know what I mean? There wasn't a conscious, like, in the way that maybe in the South or whatever that it was. But I think in that he brought up that idea of control and power and reversing it, it is kind of interesting that you bring up Vince Staples because white people also say the N-word at Vince Staples shows. So the difference is that perhaps that Schoolboy Q feels that he's in control by being the one granting them the permission. But Vince Staples shows, I mean, I saw Vince at, I've seen him 4 or 5 times. Saw him at Complex Con in Long Beach. I was bothered by how many white people were saying the N-word at a Vince Staples show. So whether he is uncomfortable with it or not, whether Schoolboy is uncomfortable with it or not, like that is that's what happens in America. Like you don't really get to decide who, like if you're going to make money off something, America takes your culture and that's what it does. It assimilates everything. You know, I mean, that's the combination of the quote unquote melting pot and capitalism, right? Like if you like Fall Out Boy, guess what? Other people like Fall Out Boy too. And now they're singing to Paris Hilton. If you create a type of music that's for your friends and your community and someone realizes they can make money off of it and you want to make money off of it too, it's out there now, you know? And that was interesting that you brought up Vince because it like that is a problem that the two of them as friends have approached from a different direction, but it's ultimately the same result if you go see their shows, and at least in Southern California, that's where, you know, I've seen them, but.
Adrian, you know, he's like, he got We Matter work that's in the Smithsonian and shit, right? So he's really popular. So people are really, you know, he'll have people hit him up about work, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, like, he has a real issue selling work to people who don't truly understand it, who just want it, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, he's making good money, like, hella solid, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, really successful dude, you know what I mean, at what he's doing. But we were talking about that today, how like he has an issue with like, you know, dog, like certain people having his work, you know, and don't truly understand it. You feel me? And I think like, you know, but that's part of capitalism. He makes very, very, you know, black art. You know what I'm saying? His photos are very black. But, you know, people who just, you know, want to have the piece to say they have it, but don't really respect where it came from or understand or want to understand where it came from. You know, like, you know, just recently in St. Louis, like last year, I think there was like some people on the line, you know, on the line of like Forest Park, like they were protesting and they came out on the line with guns, like defending their home. Nigga, you live been to Forest Park and saw these houses in St. Louis? I mean, these are enormous mansions, you know what I'm saying, that are passed down through families, though. You don't have to worry about shit. You just really being
just
a dickhead
on the street.
You're just being a racist asshole. But because his work is valued at a particular rate, these are the type of people that can afford the shit. So he has to deal with motherfuckers like this that, you know, don't see themselves as racist, you know what I'm saying, but have these views, and he struggles with that. So I get you know, like I guess that would be a similar struggle. Like, well, you're popping now, you out here, you feel me? You know what I mean? Like as Vince and Schoolboy Q, but you know, the people who are
Adrian's a dad. Yeah. That's part of it right. too, right? I mean, and that's like we asked Shea Serrano about that. We're asking him about how aggressively he goes at Trump people, and I really respected his answer. Like, I've been poor. I know I can be poor and happy, but I can't put up with this type of person and be happy. But you know, you have kids. I think that's it's a real question of like, if you're Adrian, do I sell my work at a lower rate? Do I close off a college option that my daughter might want in 10, 15 years? I mean, those are like real questions that I don't think there's a right. I don't think there's a right answer to them. I mean, I think it just depends on your own situation and views of the world, you know?
But when you're selling content that is so closely tied to you, ask Adrian, ask Schoolboy Q, ask Vince, you know what I'm saying? It's a big part of you and your culture. And the people that, you know, truly participated don't, not, I mean, a lot of people do and they respect it, but a lot of people don't. You know, how do you deal with that? And, you know, like you said, Vince and Schoolboy found different ways to deal with it. It's all, you know, coping, you know, trying to different ways to cope with it, but it's difficult. You know what I mean? Even niggas on that level have to deal with some bullshit. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't run from it, you know, in this country. But we got really on some other shit.
Great
today,
pick,
though.
Tyler.
You can't ignore it. You can't ignore it reading this, though. You can't ignore these topics reading this shit, though. You feel what I'm saying?
All right. That's our time for Jenkins and Jones. We'll be back on Monday with the Booger Boy of the Week. And maybe we'll get another ludicrous tweet thread to do a dramatic reading of. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But thanks for fucking with us.
Are we not doing the book club again until next Thursday? Or are we doing it again
next
Sunday?
Thursday? If okay, that okay. were, I think that just makes sense. We'll just have
that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, do it weekly. And then that gives people a little more time to, you know, put down whatever they're watching. And it's like my thing is, it's like you could read 120 pages in a week, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I read
that in like 12 hours, my nigga. Like not even probably like 3 or 4, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, like, I have to do this was like summer's reading, you know what I mean?
I did the same thing. I started reading it last night. I think you and I both started texting the group chat at like 10 p.m last night.
Right, that's when we started reading it to be prepared for tomorrow, you know what I mean? Like we had if it wasn't like a requirement, I space that shit out a week. It really makes sense.
For sure. Okay. All right. So we'll have the second half of this book on next Thursday's episode. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you for fucking with us. Bye.
Peace.
Bye.